What's up, Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devinder Hardwar.
I'm Deputy Editor Sherlyn Lowe.
This week, all those Apple AI features that they've been talking about for the past like half a year, they're finally here in iOS 18.2. We've had a chance to play with them. Actually, I've been playing with them for a while. I know you have too, Sherlyn. But now the general public has them, and I think they're kind of hilarious. I think they're kind of bad and useless, and we'll talk about that and AI image generation in general. But also some of these things are actually kind of useful. I know you're a fan of like the multi-layer recording in voice memo, Sherlyn. So good stuff to talk about here. As always, if you're enjoying the show, please be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. Leave us a review on iTunes and drop us an email at podcast@engadget.com. Join us Thursday mornings around 10:45 a.m. Eastern for our live stream on our Engadget YouTube channel as well. You could do some Q&A. We've got a fun group of people here, and sometimes we show off gadgets, and sometimes we show off Genmoji, as you'll see.
And this week, you really gotta, I think even if you come back to watch the replay, it's gonna like really enhance your experience of this talk.
It kind of goes both ways. Sometimes the live stream viewers, it's worth going checking out the audio version of the show, and then vice versa. But yeah, let's talk about this. So iOS 18.2 came out. Sherlyn, I know you're like, you're deep. You're deep in all the Apple stuff. I know they've been talking with you. Have you tested Genmoji and Image Playground before this official release?
I took briefings where I saw it, but I didn't have any desire really to check it out before the official release. Mm-hmm. I think, first of all, they're not two features that you haven't seen anywhere ever before, right? Like, I've been playing with Samsung phones and Pixel phones, and you can use them to do the same. You probably could do the same with other devices and AI models. I think, though, this is hard.
You mean just like image generation, just like making a picture, right?
Specifically those. I mean, look, what I've been doing is just waiting till the full release comes out. I do have like the beta software. The problem is the developer account is just really annoying for me to set up on a different device, blah, 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 to get access to the dev betas.
Let's talk. You don't need to do that anymore, Sherlyn. That's the old way of doing things. But Okay. So what is interesting, though, Sherlyn, is like, I know you're a gadgety person. You like to play with the new stuff. And even you didn't feel compelled to kind of go through the steps to test this out earlier. I think that's kind of telling.
I guess so. I mean, I wanted to, because I think I was intrigued by Genmoji. I was like, and I think you can hear a bit like when I talk to Apple people and they're explaining the features, they're like, oh, you might have, you know, check them out in the beta or the dev betas. And I was like, not yet. here's what I'm trying to do. I think that the iPhone audience, the iPhone market, iPhone users tend to be, number one, so resistant to iOS updates to begin with. And number two, Apple Intelligence as a feature set isn't even rolling out to every single person with an iPhone, right? It's so limited to like 16 and up or 15 Pro and up that I think most people won't even get to use these yet. So I think that's where my interest kind of waned, where I was like, well, you know, as I'm not jumping on the hype bandwagon with everyone at the same time, then maybe I won't try to be an early user. I mean, that's me, right? Only if I can, if I'm already going to be hip and ahead of the crew by like having an iPhone 16 to begin with, then I'm good, you know?
You're good. Well, let's clarify what these things are. So we're talking about Genmoji, which is the thing, kind of a cool twist on the whole image generation thing. But basically, whenever you're typing text and you hit that little emoji bar to like go pick an image, you see the Apple Intelligence icon. You can type a few words to like create an emoji, and you can also create a person within your photo library. You could turn their face into an emoji, so have them do something silly and make that a thing you just plug into your text chat, like a typical emoji. Genmoji, generative emoji. And the other thing is Image Playground, which is Apple's, it's a playground for where you type things into the box and maybe an image appears, and it's also tied to your photo library and people within your library.
It's like Pixel Studio. Pixel's got a, Google's got Pixel Image Studios too.
And also like the OpenAI, the DALL-E kind of stuff too, except not nearly as expansive. It's not as freeform as DALL-E is. It is very restrictive. And I find, Sherlyn, like, I'm having the same problem with this stuff as I do with with DALL-E and everything. Cool, like, stuff to play with. Cool to, like, show your friends, look at how dumb this is. Look at what this AI is doing. And then functional day-to-day life, I don't care. Like, I don't know an instance where I'm going to create an image playground thing of an image and then send that to somebody in chat, or do the work to create a specific Genmoji and then send that to somebody in chat. I guess you could do that. You can reuse Genmoji once you have it.
Yes.
It's in your little emoji box. But also, I think part of the joy of emoji is it's a common language, right? Like when you when you do the thinking emoji, when you do an emoji to somebody, they're like our modern hieroglyphs. Like you kind of know what it means. Whereas if you send somebody a weird generative AI emoji, it's like, I don't, what are you trying to say?
To your point, right? It's like when you do the eyes emoji, it doesn't mean necessarily looking to the left. It could also mean like you're sus or like whatever. And people use emoji in such a like flirty, context-laden way sometimes too. Like the peach emoji does not mean peaches, dear aliens that are watching this 3,000 years from now. Like it does not, it's referring to body parts, right? So like, yeah, to your point, emoji and Genmoji, the concept alone might be a bit strange. But I mean, I played around with it and I really enjoyed like creating sort of photorealistic-ish photo, well, cartoon versions of my friends. Cartoon, in line with the Apple emoji style, right? They have their own emoji pack. Like, it looks different from Pixel, whatnot. I want to give a bit of, like, background here to add to all of this. So it might feel like we've been talking about iOS 18 and Apple Intelligence forever, but iOS 18 dropped, like, late summer, and that didn't bring any of the Apple Intelligence features. It only brought things like your new you can free your apps from the grid, right? Or like other little updates in the Maps app or the Photos redesign and that sort of thing. Then 18.1 dropped and it brought the first wave of Apple Intelligence features with like to the public. So those are mostly like summaries and your notifications, the redesigned Siri. We also, by the way, it might even seem like we've been talking about it for very long because we also cover it when it comes out in the dev beta, the public beta. It's like there's been so much iteration and like trickle releasing of these features. Now we're on 18.2 where like Dev just said, image playground, image generation, and some new like ChatGPT integrations have arrived. So I bring all that up to say that like one of the reasons I also took forever to kind of get on the 18.2 release, like I don't know how long it took you, Devendra, but I scheduled like an overnight update, right? And this morning I was like, picked up my phone, very excited to try out Genmoji. And then it's like, no, your update didn't install. Fine, installed it. Took like maybe 30 minutes. Then I was like, okay, let's go. They show me the, here's what's new in 18.2, whatever. Go straight into keyboard, go for the emoji, look for it, press it. And they're like, oh, Genmoji and Image Playground, download the language model to do this. And I'm like, why are there so many steps? It should be like, I'm ready to play with it. And so imagine if you were just
told
about...
There's work involved, yeah.
Yeah, there's quite a lot. Anyway, there's a lot of work involved. But and then the actual use of it too, I think we should get into this. It's funny, right? Because I definitely noticed quite a lot of quirks. I used like my best friend and my boyfriend. I was like making emoji of them doing various things. And I did like one of this, like our neighbor's baby or something in a big heart. I was like, this baby in a big heart. So first take, you know, do you get to choose the picture of the person that you want to base the emoji off of or the image off of? And then they show you a few selections based on different pictures in your phone library. None of them look good. First of all, I think it's difficult to like accurately represent a baby in an emoji. But like then none of them looked very like the baby I'm talking about. And never mind, I picked the closest one, right? I picked the closest, fine, whatever, is an emoji. And then they didn't even do like what I was asking for. I was like, oh, this baby in a big heart. And they don't really, they just put the baby and then there's maybe like a heart in the background and it's just not very what I was hoping for. And with the Genmoji, you can edit, but it's not quite there. I think Image Playground gives you a bit more editing options. It's still not right. We went through our team. I pulled up like Sam Rutherford on our team, made some avatars of him first. Like I went to Image Playground. I was like, Sam cooking or Sam cooking on the moon or something like that. I was trying to do those things. And literally, if you use a text description, not only are the images terrible, and we'll get to that later, but like the background is just a square sticker that leaves very little room for actual depiction of anything. So Sam just looked like most of Sam's head took up most of the space, and then some background details, and it's just like not what I was looking
for. It's sort of like when you're walking around a city or like a carnival, and there's the people who do the caricatures of you, and it's like, sometimes it often looks like a caricature of you. Like it just looks weird. It doesn't, I know that's what they're going for. They don't want photorealism because photorealism is where potential abusive materials can appear. And I think they're being very specific about that. But also it's just bad. Like it's looking at me, right? It's created a profile of me. And Image Playground Genmoji is getting my race wrong at times. It's getting my hair wrong. Mm-hmm. I know I have I know I have a lot of gray hair. Okay, I've had gray hair since high school. I know it's getting worse, but some of the Image Playground things are like all white hair, looking like Steve Martin or something. I'm not at that point. Give me a couple decades. Some of them are just like completely bald. Like, I look like a bald Indian businessman, basically. I'm like, at the very least, I have hair, Apple, at the very least. And then, yeah, or the hair type is wrong, or like the facial structure is wrong. Some of them, I look like Urkel.
Oh, Steve gosh. Urkel himself. Yeah.
And I don't know. Just not a good thing. Clearly, they're going to work on this. And the thing about AI models is that as the models improve and as Apple gets feedback, you can also report feedback to when, like, if an image looks weird or something seems suspect, you can notify them. So this will get better eventually. But also, I'm sitting here looking at these dumb things and being like, well, I thought Apple was going to do this a little smarter than everybody else. Mm-hmm. And I guess Genmoji are maybe a little smarter, but I don't have a use for it. I don't know why people would really spend time doing this. And yeah, there's the hassle. You have to download the model. Because it's a big file, it's like a big database that has to sit
and
your
it's all device,
on device,
for yeah.
To work. Yeah. So yeah, all that stuff just didn't really work for me. Do you have any positive feelings about it, Sherlyn?
Wow. No. Can I go on and can I pile on with the negatives?
Yes, pile on.
But first of all, people in the chat are agreeing with you. Things like, yeah, what you said, it's a bad caricature, my father says. And they're all agreeing with the touch of gray, you know, Lucky Dog podcast and the hair representation. When
just
you don't see
gray,
yourself,
man.
Right, yeah. But when you don't see yourself represented accurately, it can create this huge disconnect and you're not going to use this feature. So I generated versions of, like, so many people. I was quickly trying to reproduce my friends and myself. And like, I have long hair and I've had long hair for maybe like 20 years now, very long past shoulder length hair. And the vast majority of the pictures that Image Playground generated of me, first of all, were a little more pronounced Asian features than I think I have.
And much shorter hair too.
Much shorter hair, like above chin length, like chin, like a bob, but like a pretty drastic bob.
You look and that's like already, you look like a Sailor Moon character, Sherlyn. Like, it turns you into like a redheaded person. I think one of them even has like a sailor outfit on you. I'm like, what are you pulling from Apple? What's going on here?
It's interesting, right? Because and the good news about this feature is that Apple's image generation is pretty transparent about showing you the picture it went off of. So you can kind of see why, you know, like maybe in this lighting, my hair looked red, maybe in that, you know. And like, here's the thing though. I used, when I was using Genmoji, I think there's still an issue with the caching because in Image Playground too, it does this where like if you continue to create images after one after another, the person's name or the prompt before stays there and it gets added onto, right?
Yeah.
That when that happens in Genmoji, there's no real like reset button, I guess. It is not very clear. I do get the option to reset, but I need to wait until after I enter a prompt. But what happened was first I created emoji of like the baby, I said, and then my best friend. And my best friend is like way more tan than I am, and she's Filipino. So there's like, when I put my picture, when I was like, oh, make a picture of me doing such and such thing, my skin tone became hers for some reason in my emoji, and I was very brown, Sherlyn. And I was like, I don't think I've ever reached that level of tan in my life, ever. It was incredibly strange. And I was like, this is weird. And here's the thing, it's very easy to jump to, this is racism or whatever, but I'm like, oh, I can see why that happened because of the cache. It was caching the info it stored for the person before me and then was mixing it together with what it had for me. And I had to like just reset, right? I had to be like, edit this person or like whatever. I had to go in and choose that option. Here's the thing, it's all well and good when it's in the hands of people like us who know what's going on and understand why. My God, when this hits the public and they're like, why did you paint me in brown, right? It's going to get a lot of outrage, I think. So very strange. I
don't know about outrage,
all.
But certainly like annoyance. Like it's not a, this
sure,
is not
yeah.
a surprise in the light feature, which is what I think Apple is trying to do. But also, yeah, I do think it has trouble with skin tones, like in general. Like I don't know what models are basing on or how Apple tested this, but like, you know, Genmoji cannot tell the difference between me and a person who is a black person. And it's very different. You know, it's just a very different thing. I understand like skin tones can be similar, but body type, hair type, all these things, it's not seeing it properly. And that's just kind of wild. So yeah, I know. I'll love to see what the people say.
For the people who can see this on the stream right now, I'm showing you, this is new Genmoji creation page, and it says very clearly beta next to it. And this is based off of a picture of me. This has created based on the prompt of Sherlyn smiling or something. And those of you who are in the chat can see exactly what it thinks I look like as an emoji. And Devendra, why don't you describe this for me?
That's not too bad. I've had.
Are you serious? This is like when you're like picking the emoji uh-huh. skin tone in the emoji keyboard and you're like yellow, pale, white, whatever. This is like 5 on a 6-point scale, I think, in terms of the color.
It also could be lighting. It could be all sorts of stuff. But yeah, I think the overall feature, at least the feature is showing like that kind of looks like I can squint and I can kind of see your face there. But on mine, like, no, it's just like Stephen Urkel, not even the cool Stefan Urkel.
Supposed to be Sherlyn writing a book. Just FYI, it's quite hilarious to me. So, but good go
stuff.
On, sorry.
Good stuff. No. I think it's good. Well, do you want to move on to any of the other features? Like, there are other AI features coming. I mean, so we talked about Genmoji, Image Playground in general. You can type words and make images to share in your messages. I want to know from chat, like, are you folks actually using this? Do you see a value in this? Because I hear from a lot of people, if they really want to do this, they're going to open up the ChatGPT app and kind of do it there, or do it in places that have already proven to, you know, work with this model. I wonder, like, Apple is going to be going for the mainstream users who may not have done the ChatGPT playtime yet. And I feel like that's the main goal there. There are other features, though, like the Siri integration with ChatGPT is also rolling out alongside iOS 18.2. I've been like testing this thing 18.2 for a while in the various beta versions. And the ChatGPT integration is interesting, although you have to be specific. Like, you can go into the settings. By default, every time it goes out to ChatGPT, like if you ask Siri a question it doesn't understand, it's like, would you like ChatGPT to do this? Or if you tell it, hey, ask ChatGPT to do this, I think it still gives you an extra confirmation to say, hey, you're going outside your device. In your settings, you can change that. So it just kind of does it automatically. It's up to you if that's a thing you want to actually do. You can also tie your ChatGPT like pro account and everything to it as well. Have you played with that stuff, Sherlyn?
No, I mean, I thought I had it. That's why the trickle drop of features is so bad. I thought I had it with the initial release of the redesigned Siri. And I was like, oh, you know, craft a meal plan for me. And it didn't even bother to try to do that because it didn't have that ability to, you know, tap ChatGPT in to do that yet. But no, I like I said, been very focused on the image generation because that's very fun for me. I also don't see myself using those types of features a lot. I mean, again, in various ways, whether it be through Copilot or like Pixel or whatever, I've had access to something similar for a very long time. And I just have never, honestly, in my life, haven't found myself using these features. I think why I've been playing so much with the image generation is I could see myself using image generation more than the writing base or the like come up with a plan type of things because I'm a writer. I don't want to be replaced. So I can happily replace an artist, though, like a graphic designer. I'll let the AI take your jobs. I will say, you go on.
Well, you like to doodle. When I saw you last week in New York, Trillin, that's where I was out, folks. But Trillin yes. loves the Amazon things, the Kindle thing that
the
you're
Kindle
writing
scribes,
on now.
Yep.
You can now take your notes to the next level, according to Apple.
Oh, God,
with
yeah.
Image
those
wand.
Are great.
Did you play with that, like the doing a doodle? And having Apple
and intelligence. Having it be drawn. So yeah. I didn't do that because I don't have an iPad that I've updated to Apple Intelligence just yet. But what you can do with an app iPad with an A17 Pro and M series chip, etc., is you get Apple Intelligence and you go to the Notes app and you can do a lot of like. You can draw, like you can sketch an illustration to accompany your notes and then circle it and then have Apple Intelligence kind of make an actual illustration for you. The I will tell you this, I was very cranky. This was a briefing in New York recently. I was incredibly cranky for various reasons. One of them being probably I was hungry, right? And the Vintra has seen me
hangry. You have to understand, yeah, Sherlyn doesn't just get hungry. She gets hangry. So yes, what happened?
So then we in the briefing, and at some point this person who's doing the demo is showing us this feature. They've written a note about terrariums, and they've drawn a really bad sketch of a terrarium, and the word terrarium is below it. My brain is like, tiramisu?
Tiramisu.
And then like she circles it and then has the like Apple pencil, Apple wand, magic dude turn it into a picture of a terrarium. And like the disappointment, Devendra, when I saw that it was not tiramisu.
Well, you still couldn't eat it. Although when you start clawing at the screen, like, that's not food. Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry, Apple.
Yeah. It was very funny. I was like, and I confessed to them afterwards. I was like, legit, your handwriting is not bad, but my hunger-induced brain saw tiramisu. But yeah, that's exactly what you can do, right? Like if you are writing notes for a school project or whatever, and you want to make your slides look pretty with a hand-drawn quote or somewhat hand-drawn illustration of whatever you're writing up. Like maybe we're writing about quantum computing. We want a drawing of several servers linked to each other. And I am bad at drawing squares and lines. So I can just, you don't even have to start anywhere. You can circle an empty space on the note, and then the Apple system will like look at the context of what's been written around the page and draw up like a picture for you based on the content. So that's pretty interesting. I'd love to try that out. I think a lot of the notes app or the pencil based features are very fun.
Well, speaking of like if somebody's jotting down a note, what you can also do is highlight text and have ChatGPT or Siri itself like rewrite your text or do certain things. Like, okay, yeah, I don't want AI to take away writing jobs either, Shalin, but Apple is now fully down this bandwagon as well. Have you played with any of those things? Because I've done a few things. It's kind of cool. I understand for us and people who write for a living, it may seem like sacrilege. Like, why would you even do this? But I also understand there are a lot of people who don't write for a living and don't maybe not feel as confident about sending an email out or some sort of professional communication. Just want like a little bit of help. The secret that a lot of writers have, a lot of journalists have, is that we have editors behind us often who kind of make our dumb mistakes, kind of clear those up. So I do kind of think like having AI proofreading is just like the next step beyond spell check, basically, to kind of just help you in certain instances when it comes to grammar or whatever. Completely rewriting some text, that's where it gets kind of a little iffy, because then when you have an overzealous editor who completely rewrites your words and start to feel not great about that whole process. Have you tried any of this stuff, Shalin?
I feel like it's so bad because every time you ask me about some sort of AI feature and whether I've tried it, I'm like, no, I think no.
I got to know. I've done a bunch. I've tried to purposefully write some bad emails to people.
Yeah.
And yes, it does job of turning that word talent into something better. Yeah.
I've done it in service of testing products, right? I've done it in like trying to test the latest Galaxy AI or whatever. And it's never really, it's been always awkward. The results are always a little formal and stilted. And I've tried it in so many different options. So I think in Apple, in Pixels, and in Galaxy devices. I just think the idea of tone correction, and I've been ruminating on this thought for a while. The notion that your tone is something that needs to be fixed and conveyed through your text is an interesting one. That like, are we maybe reading a little too much into each other's tone? And or
what happens? Yeah.
And also, are we needing the AI to do this for us, or should we be learning this ourselves about how to speak?
That's the other
nicely?
Thing. We're kind of like offloading some skill construction to the AI too, and I am kind of worried of where this takes us, because when it comes to writing, it's sort of like you're hitting cruise control, right? I'm putting down some words, I'm just gonna like let AI take the wheel, basically, to like construct these sentences and thoughts, and that doesn't help you as a person get better at writing or formulating your thoughts. And a lot of writing is just like sitting down, getting thoughts together and kind of putting them in a specific narrative flow. If we're always relying on our computers to do that, then we don't train ourselves to do that. And to me, that's really different than something like spell check. It's like, yeah, we all have trouble spelling words. That's just like rote memorization sometimes. Or even grammar checks, like remembering grammar rules. Always hard to do. Like some of my favorite writers, I look at their transcripts. I look at Quentin Tarantino's scripts for his movies. Dude does not know how to spell anything. Like, he just like goes with the flow, and it kind of works in context of what he's doing. But when it comes to fully rewriting things, tone control, basically kind of steering your narrative in ways where you don't even really think about it, I do think that's going to lead to some bad things, like for us as a culture and as a society. Have you seen these stories, Sherlyn, about teachers who are like, hey, I had the weirdest experience with my kid, like, or with my students, like, we're talking about something like facts, and they bring up things from ChatGPT, and I tell them, no, I'm a teacher who knows things, and I can look at books and tell you that's wrong. And the kid is like, no, but ChatGPT says this. And as they keep asking ChatGPT things, yeah, it keeps coming up with like different misinformation answers and different answers.
Yeah.
And the trust of like how you know things and what facts are is clearly eroding. And to me, yes, that is a potential worry with all of these tools. Yeah.
I mean, I think we can get into that. I just want to quickly point out that Declan in the chat has a very good point. That like maybe we need AI to talk us down before we get angry at the tone in someone's email rather than change the tone of the email before it gets sent. Like, yeah.
You know get what? Some warning maybe, sometimes. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's like, and but the problem is then, like, where does the policing begin and end? Like, it's like, oh, this email you're sending sounds a bit angry. Or, hey, I noticed your heart rate increased. Are you getting angry at this very innocuous email that your friend just sent you? Like, you know, how does it happen? I think that is a very interesting approach to start from there instead of, like, change the tone of your message. I will point out, I'll talk back to your point, Devendra, about like the quality of the sources and media and whatever that everyone's being exposed to nowadays. We've seen this happen over the last few decades, right? Like, especially in the last decade. Like, I was just talking to someone that worked their entire life in like the print magazine space. And they were saying that like, if you look at, and I was telling them like, if you just look at the time it goes into producing periodicals in the past, right? Like magazines used to be monthly. Sure, there were daily newspapers. And then there's, but with the rise of each faster delivery of information came also the rise of inaccuracy and like misleading reporting because everything becomes so reactionary. And with the ChatGPT and the AI development now, it's worse than fast, right? It's like, 7 different answers to the same question because the AI is constantly trying to generate something new for you. And then so eventually we might not even have truth and fact anymore.
Mm-hmm.
There might not be such a thing as fact checking or misleading or inaccurate because there won't be the word accurate anymore.
Well, it's all about vibe checking, you know? Now, isn't it, Trillin? Like that's what it's all. There's so much to talk about. I feel like an entire presidential campaign was just run on vibes and people ignored obvious facts in front of them and were just like, vibes. We like this vibe. Vibe good. And these vibes are going to carry us like all the way to the end of the world, apparently. But yeah, it's true. Like, facts don't matter as much, especially when the sort of things that can kind of keep facts in check disappear. Like consequences for bad actions, a sense of shame, a sense of like sticking to a defined sense of reality. All those things are disappearing. So,
and bring now, back shame,
bring back shame. Shame. Bring back the shame lady from Game of Thrones. We just need that just AI doing that. Yeah. I love her.
Look, bring back shame, but also bring back joy. You know what I mean?
Bring back joy and shame
and balance.
It's a whole thing. So this is a whole other conversation that we'll probably do at some point. But yeah, we are just starting with all these Apple intelligence features, folks. I want to know how people are using them. Have they made your life any easier? There are some things I can point to. Like, I think the phone call, recording and transcription stuff, like that's cool. Voice memo transcription. Yep. Just having that baked in there is super useful. And one thing I am is I am really jealous of kids in college right now because of like the really dumb stuff I have to spend a lot of time doing, like recording lectures, recording notes, transcribing things. Your phone, the supercomputer in your pocket is just doing it for you. You don't even need an internet connection. Just kind of wild where we're going. There are some exciting things. Yeah. Yeah.
I will point out also that with iOS 18.2's release, that visual intelligence is also available now. And visual intelligence is like exclusive to iPhone 16s with camera control, right? And the only way to access visual intelligence, which by the way is the one where you can use the camera to point at things in the world and it will get like, either you can search it and get answers through ChatGPT how to use it, or you can, I believe the alternative, Google image search it and see what it is. So the, And then visual intelligence is like I find it weird that the only way you can access it is through long pressing the camera control. Like, there's no other way, which is kind of wild to me, but maybe one day. I haven't played around with it too much yet. I could see it being potentially pretty useful, like being able to point to things in the world and asking questions about it is a genuinely useful application of the camera, not of the AI, right? Like when Google Lens came out, I was like, this is genuinely useful because yes, people wanted to be able to look at the things around them and do image searching things. There were like real actual helpful things in the past, and now it's like AI everything.
I don't know why it needs to be just iPhone 16 alone. Like, is it just because of the camera button? Because, hey, they spent a whole lot of time last year talking about the action button. And why can't I just, like, long press the action button on an iPhone 15 Pro?
Because it's not a camera-related feature. But I get what you're saying. Yeah.
Kind of do the, I don't know. It is a camera-related feature, but the actual processing work is not. That's outside of the camera.
Exactly. That's the AI
models. So I have a feeling. Like, maybe this will come down to the Pro phones eventually, but I think so.
I think eventually it will, but right now I think because it's so tied to the camera, I think they want to make it so visual intelligence can't be used outside the main camera app, and so they're not freeing it up. And it's also very Apple to be like, oh, the camera things are tied to the camera control button. Like, that's just how they've organized it just in their collective heads.
How are you feeling about camera control at this point, by the way, Sherlyn? Because I remember you were not hot on it when you reviewed these things. Are you more used to them now or anything?
I used it a lot in that I use it to trigger the camera a lot because I've effectively replaced the lock screen shortcut button with the camera control. And it's great because I use that other shortcut space for something else now. Is unlocking my front door. And I also use it in video recording sometimes to zoom during recording a video, which is nice. But very often I find it annoys me. Very often it's still triggering the zoom when I don't want it to, when I don't want the camera to jump 2x in, right, by accident. So I think it's one of those things where I live with it. I find it useful about 50% of the time, and 50% of the time it's kind of either useless or a hindrance.
Mm-hmm. I'm kind of thinking, should I make the jump to the 16 Pro at this point? And like the main draws were... that the camera controls, basically all the features tied to that. And if I were a plain iPhone 15 user, then yeah, if you bump up to the new gen, you get Apple Intelligence. But I still get all the Apple Intelligence features. So yeah, just don't really need to do that. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm trying to think like what else is available in Apple Intelligence that still isn't here. And there's
I have some for you. Can I list some things? Because I'm looking at the Apple blog post. Apple says even more capabilities are coming soon. Siri will be even more capable, drawing on your own personal context. That's something they did talk about at WWDC. And that could make Siri a lot more useful if it knows like your meetings and stuff from your emails. On-screen awareness for Siri will be able to take hundreds of new actions, priority notifications, better priority notifications. And
The priority notifications is different from summarize notifications.
Okay. That's true. So right now we have summarize. Yeah. Then eventually they will show you what's most important.
Exactly.
In Image Playground, you'll get a sketch style that'll let you draw something, and then it'll make an image out of that. Because right now you have to describe a thing, basically. So those are the big things coming. And again, nothing super compelling. Like nothing like, oh my God, I really got to get an iPhone for this. But also, I don't think Apple is doing what Google is doing or what Microsoft is doing, being like, our entire future is set on this one AI thing. I think Apple is being very like cautious about this, even though it is such a selling point for them as well. They're not as gung-ho about it as everybody else. And maybe that's a good thing. Like maybe the story of this year was that Apple was kind of behind, but now everybody has poured tens of billions of dollars into generative AI. And now the reporting is like, well, a lot of research has slowed down. Like the actual progress of it is not getting much better as it has been over the last couple of years. So slow and steady wins the race, maybe, for Apple.
Two things. One is that like Apple continues to do one thing different from everyone else, and it is in that privacy, right, approach. So the cloud compute, the privacy core, like those are, you know, you can with Apple know that in playing around with these AI features, supposedly, and I think there's like a very high trust level here, you can trust that your data is not being used for A, training, B, like nobody can see it at Apple. Like there's just much more attention and care to the privacy of your data. So that's a good thing that Apple continues
to go check out a reporting around that from WWDC, by the way, because there was a whole panel around it and we reported on that. Yeah.
Yeah. And Apple reiterated that again with, you know, every release of new iOS 18 and Apple Intelligence features. The second thing I wanted to point out to what you're saying, right, that companies are spending billions of dollars on generative AI features that ultimately don't seem to really help us all that much, is Avery on our team said this morning when we were looking at all these like really terrible pictures generated by iPhones. In a sarcastic way, it's nice to see companies buy up nuclear power plants just to allow AI to do these things, right? Like the amount of money and the energy that we're spending and resources we're spending on making these features just so I can make a cute emoji of a little next door neighbor's baby. Like
it's super dumb. At the very least, Apple's not one of those companies like buying the nuclear plants at this point, but also all this stuff is happening on device. Like it is the local model on your device generating Gemoji and everything. And the difference with that and like Copilot and everything else and Google Gemini is like those are hitting the cloud and those are often doing more complex. Like the reason why Gemoji and that Image Playground don't look as good as DALL-E 3 because it's not doing as much work. The model is much smaller and OpenAI and everybody needs those servers to do that extra work. And that's where the high energy cost and everything is coming in. Mm-hmm. The other feature, the other way of looking at AI is like these MPUs or the neural unit on iPhones, they're doing that work and they're doing low level work that hopefully isn't draining your battery too much, but could for a lot of people like make a lot more features much more useful. That's where transcription comes in for voice memos and everything. And that level of AI as a service, AI as a tool is to me, like pretty compelling because we kind of know it's just like another computing feature we control and it kind of like we tap into it as much as we need to. So that's where I'm standing on this. We're going to have a lot more to say about AI and Apple Intelligence, everything in the coming months, certainly leading to CES next in the couple weeks before CES, we'll have a CES preview. Next week, we'll probably do our year end wrap up to talk about the biggest stories, biggest winners and losers of 2024. That'll be next week. But I want to know how you folks are using Apple Intelligence and all these new features. Drop us an email at podcastengadget.com. All right, let's move on to some other news. And speaking of generative AI slop, here's OpenAI. Sora, the Sora video generation model, is officially available to people who are subscribed to ChatGPT Plus or Pro. You can make, 1080p videos up to 20 seconds long. Again, what do you do with this? And maybe like instantly generating a cool little video of something is more useful than just like a random generative image. But how do you feel about this stuff, Shulin?
The same way I felt about like everything I've mentioned so far, right? Uh-huh. I think I've heard good things about just Sora and AI video generation, right? And I could see how it would be useful because as someone who is an aspiring influencer myself, I'm like, I could use some AI generated B-roll. But I think, you know, with video, A, it requires so much more energy. B, there's so much more, like to the point when it gets good is and realistic is the point where it becomes the most scary, right? Like right now it's just funny and doesn't look real, but like one day it's going to be pretty bad. So I don't know. I mean, I guess good for everyone to start playing around with it, but I don't know what it means for our world.
What does it mean for our world? Let's we can take a look at some of the images being produced. Or no, this was a live stream ChatGPT did. But in our feed here.
It's very realistic looking. Yeah. And I saw some of the other, like the snow animal ones. Yeah. So snow animal. Animals and snow.
Animals and snow. I mean, it's cool. Like, it's cool that you can create the stuff. But the thing I'm thinking is, at what cost? You know, at what cost are we just creating this playground of, I don't know, of just like videos on demand? Part of the joy of creating things and creating art is also to actually do the work, you know, to actually capture the things. And somebody, I forget who it was, but somebody smart said, like, the act of creation is the magic behind art, right? Not just the final product. You know, you can't just flick your fingers and make something appear. It is the soul and the energy that a human being puts into something that can kind of make it make it really compelling. You've probably seen Mad Max Fury Road, Sherlyn. I don't know about Furiosa, but something like...
I have seen Furiosa, yeah.
Something like Mad Max Fury Road and Furiosa as well. Like, going to the middle of nowhere in a desert with giant cars, doing real stunts, doing cool stuff. There is something inherently compelling about that that just looks so different than, like, the vast majority of MCU garbage that's out there sometimes, you know? Like, I like MCU movies just fine, but CG characters fighting CG characters are not as compelling as, like, humans doing stunts, vehicles in real places. Yeah.
That's the thing. I was going to comment when I was watching those, like, you know, the sort of animal videos that Sora in that demo, the opening I was showing. It's one of the problems is that it's not real, right? It's like... when you watch a nature documentary, you're not watching it because it's looks nice. You're watching it because, like, it's like, wow, it's incredible that animals do this. And once AI replicates that, it's like, oh, I guess you can make the animal do anything you want. So it's not really real,
that's true.
Number one.
I mean, sometimes kind of, like, a big selling point of Blu-rays was Planet Earth, right? That whole series where the stuff, like, the footage looked incredible, but it's also because a human being spent, like, a week in a jungle trying to get, like, that one shot of that, so those dancing birds, which are now the videos everywhere.
And the BBC, even in producing that series, was also criticized for, like, exaggerating some of the sounds or, like, adding in sounds. So, like, people, you can tell people are already, like, not happy when they hear fake stuff. So that's why I remain skeptical about some of the, like, the success and the likelihood of success of these things. I can see maybe they could be potentially useful. The other thing I wanted to say was that, like, we also, as a species, don't like sameness. We just don't. When we see... number one, when you see, like, an interesting headline take off and, like, people read it, right? Like, the first time someone went, I am a deals editor and here are the 5 shopping things I would do this Black Friday. The first time someone did that, people were probably like, oh, that's interesting. I would read it, right? And then the subsequent maybe 5 times other people read it. So that's when all the SEO people in the world were like, this works. Let's replicate it.
Let's replicate it and drive it into the ground.
It's like a joke on Reddit and then that's repeated to death all over the forums. So I'm just like, I'm done. I don't want to see the same joke all over again. So I think that if that's what AI ends up doing, and AI is less likely to come up with independent creative thinking than it is to replicate existing thought. So that's why I'm not bullish, right? So anyway.
It's also like, hey, the Hollywood strike, was it last year? But the Hollywood strike, like, a lot of it kind of hinged on AI as well and how people thought they would be used or how their likenesses would be used. Whenever anything uses a little bit of AI now, there is immediate pushback. One of my favorite movies of this year was Late Night with the Devil. It's a Shudder thing, really cool little indie horror, but they use an AI generated image for like a half second for like a standby, this channel's having trouble message. And it's a static image. It's not video or anything, but they got a lot of flack for that. And I think justifiably that, hey, you could have just hired somebody. You have artists on staff. Hire somebody to make that image. That's work a human could have done. This movie was made before a lot of people were doing a lot of AI pushback. But the arguments I saw for Sora is like, hey, it could make B-roll a little easier for people. Like when you're watching a movie, you just need like a shot of the city, you know, a shot of like a train going through a tunnel or something. You can just like generate that within Sora. Never mind that there are people out there shooting B-roll, like shooting footage that can be sold in market. That is how this stuff happens right now. That is a viable marketplace for human artists. You can do that with a couple clicks, you know, a couple taps on your keyboard. I feel like we lose more than we gain with all this stuff. But anyway,
I think here's what it is. I think I used to want to just let things run their course. That AI, the way we're reacting to AI right now is important and necessary. But I also think that it's slowing down the natural running its course process, the way like NFTs were like huge and then it went crazy and then boom, it went away on its own because people realized how dumb it was on their own eventually. And I don't think AI is going to fully go away the way NFTs did, but I do think that like the sort of novel like chasing of it, the sort of overly hyping it up might die down if we if we just let it prove, show its ass, right? Like,
I mean, that's one way to do it. But also, Sherlyn, what business are we in? We are in the business of telling people why things are dumb. And I agree.
I'm not saying we specifically shouldn't, by the way. I'm saying, and we will, we always do. But I think there's a lot more, like, I don't know.
I think you're saying there's a lot of performative rejection of it too, which I think is kind of a whole thing. Listen, it's weird how human culture works, right? Like, it's sort of like when in the first Trump era, a lot of people were anti-Trump and made a lot of money by taking on that persona, even if, like, it turns out in the end, like, they were not as, like, we call them resistance grifters now, but they were not as, like, noble figures as you probably would have wanted. And that kind of happens with everything. I kind of agree, like, some of this will play out eventually. But also, we gotta, at the very least, the people in this industry have to speak up to, like, when things are dumb.
Yes, yeah.
And, you know, make executives feel bad sometimes. The whole thing.
Uh-huh. I have thoughts on making executives feel bad.
I did that last week, and I actually, it felt pretty good, actually, because it's sort of like, oh, you've just never heard that. You've never heard somebody tell you, no, this is a dumb idea, and you're dumb for saying it. We'll talk more about that. There are some CS embargoes, folks, that I think you guys are going to have a kick out of. All right, let's move on. What is next? Also, speaking of overhyped tech that is kind of dying, GM announced it's ending support for Cruise robotaxis. And I think this was mainly because there was that horrific incident where the Cruise crashed into somebody in San Francisco, right? And dragged somebody down the street for quite a bit. And GM has poured billions of dollars into Cruise and into the idea of self-driving robotaxis, and it's just kind of done. The news written up here by Anna Washenko at Engadget is that the Cruise seems to be folded into an in-house technical team developing advanced driver assistance programs and eventually fully autonomous personal vehicles. So have you thought much about self-driving, Sherlyn? Because a lot of people think this is another sort of grift that companies have been pushing on us. And I agree, but also I think this is actually a more useful thing. If we get it right, this could save lives. Like, this could, I am very much, like, pro this feature if we can actually get it going. How are you feeling about Cruise and self-driving in general?
I tend to agree with you. Like, I think that there are a lot of issues in the way, there are a lot of challenges right now, but I think it is an important thing that when, you know, we get it right, is going to be useful. I think there's so many, like, applications. Number one, robotaxis in this case is, like, I could see it as being, like, a useful shuttle. I could see it as, like, a helpful getting people around sort of means of transportation that is, if we do it right, could be environmentally friendly. It could be, like, great for accessibility. There's just so many things. It could help people who are isolated get out of the house, whatever, right? Then the self-driving, the cruise control, that sort of thing, like, if we can get to a point where we can trust, like, obstacle avoidance and, like, sensors to do a better job of, like, staying, paying attention to what's around you on the roads, then the sleepy drivers that drive all night or the people who are distracted driving, you are right, it could save lives. So I think there's a lot here that is worth paying attention to and investing in, but we're not there yet.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, GM, they acquired Cruise in 2016, and I think that was, like, the full-on hype cycle, like, hey, we can almost make this happen.
Everyone's like, AI everything. Their attention span is so short, they've decided to not invest in the things that could pan out. They've got 5 years for it to work, and if it doesn't, they're moving on to the next hype thing, and now the hype thing is AI, maybe.
It can kind of, I think it may all, like, work in concert, like, some of the AI processing and model processing. Hey, all these things relied on computer vision, which in another time were things that we classified as AI. It's AI processing of incoming video and photos and everything. So again, what is AI? How do we think about AI? It's really generative AI is the real hype cycle now, but we have been trying to push this for a while. Yeah.
I was about to say, when you were saying that we're like, you know, we have to talk about AI, and I think Mark Dell in the chat was saying that AI is here to stay. I was like, yeah, you know what? I can agree with AI is here to stay, because why? AI has been here. It's just had a different name for the longest time. Like, people have been repackaging what we now call AI/Gen AI over the last decade, like, furiously.
There have been AI innovations in previous decades, and what keeps happening is a thing
machine
called
machine learning is what's been
AI winter is the thing. Like, every time scientists and researchers start to like the old ways of doing it, it's like, I could just program a thing if I just like plugged in every little fact, like programmed a machine like by itself. I could make an artificially intelligent thing. That didn't work out. So researchers have tried new things, and there are rises of innovation and then winters after a while. The thing that kind of pushed all of this is the whole idea of the transformer model and everything we kind of saw after that. So that is at the heart of generative AI, but also like computer vision stuff, like all ties into having large data sets that these things can kind of recognize and match to. But anyway, that's Cruise, RIP Cruise.
Actually, should we move on another topic in AI recently? So this week also, Google dropped Gemini 2.0. It is the next generation model of its machine learning or AI, whatever you want to call it, model. And today it previewed its lightweight version, the 2.0 Flash. This one's available to all Gemini users. You can probably enable it if you want in the Gemini web client 2.0. And 2.0 will be coming to all its different like Gemini models as well. 2.0 is also going to be like starting to roll out first with like AI overviews and search.
By the way, I just want to say, Sherlyn, agentic. I hate this word. Everyone is talking about AI agents right now, and the cover image
agentic AI
is enabling agentic AI. That's not a word. This is very dumb, but go ahead. Please go on. Keep going.
It's the idea of chatbots facing people, I guess, right? Like
AI you talk to, or an agent.
Yeah. So, but before we get there, there's AI overviews. It's search is where Flashpoint 2.0 is showing up. The new model of Gemini is showing up. So it will allow AI overviews to tackle more complex and involved questions like multi-step math and coding problems. And then also, you know, AI overviews will be coming to more regions and languages. It's already also, by the way, Gemini 2.0 is already in things like Project Astra, which I think if we remember from either Google I/O or the Pixel phone launch, was the feature where you could use your phone's camera to just, you know, look around in a room, and it's like remembering things that it saw in a previous frame, for example. So that was pretty cool. And then, yeah, it's supposedly better performance. It's got like a 63% score on hidden math, which is a benchmark for AI models to complete competition level math problems. The older model, Gemini 1.5 Flash, only got a score of 47.2. So it is improved in that it scored higher on a test. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot more that was actually announced by Google this week, but like, I think for us, the focus of Gemini 2.0 kind of is a good way to bring all of that into conversation without covering every single like development.
I'm just looking at this Google video. Complete tasks. You can complete tasks with their AI. I love completing tasks. I cannot wait for help.
I sure do.
Completing
tasks. I never complete tasks. I only start them.
This is true. I mean, the real, is this AI is really the solution to like millennial malaise, where we're just like simple tasks where we know like, I gotta ship this package. I'm like, but I don't want to. I just don't feel like it. I'm tired.
Do my laundry. Fold my clothes. Just clean my bathroom. Mm-hmm. That's all I need you to do, you know?
Oh, my God. Clean bathrooms. I mean, the thing is, hey, we can, a lot of the stuff you can pay a human to help you out with right now. So
I think, yeah, exactly that. I can hire a cleaner. Or we should put AI to work cleaning bathrooms, like make the humanoid robots that Boston Dynamics or whoever else is making, just put the AI in them, detect poo, clean poo. Like,
is that what happens? Then you're like, okay, well, then I need help cleaning my butt.
The robot.
That is the WALL-E feature.
No, that's not what I'm thinking. That's not what I'm thinking.
These
I'm
poor
thinking
robots.
It's a two-step. Verify surface is ceramic and not organic. And then clean poo, like if else, right? Like Mark Dell in the chat is pointing out that Tesla self-driving used to be a ton of code that you imagine is a lot of if else. I too imagine a lot of quote AI, so-called AI, to be just a lot of booleans and like loops
but
and
it's
like
not,
conditionals.
It's not is the thing. Like what's scary about the AI stuff is that it is not programmed in the way that we expect. It is sort of,
yes.
It is.
I don't think it's scary.
They make a model and it's like a lot of, there's like a black box going in there.
It's complex.
And they don't.
For sure.
When a creator doesn't know how the thing that they have made works, to me, that is a little scary, you know? And I think all of our science fiction fears around AI kind of going out of control, I think that there it does stem from a thing where when humans make tools that go out of control, that's scary. When the fire gets too big, when your airplane veers off course, when you lose control of your car, that is scary. And now what if we gave it a better reasoning, a decent amount of intelligence, gave them robot bodies? Like, I don't know. What do you think is going to happen?
I guess the way I see it is, and maybe my way of seeing it is simplistic, is that I agree that it like created all of this itself, the neural nets were doing the machine learning and all of that stuff, is that it compiled all of that by itself, right? But I still think every interaction with machines boils down to like very binary decision making. It's a very like, it's a logic process that's very like, if this and that, if like, you know, or, and then repeat endlessly, or like ad nauseum.
I feel
like
I wish
like C++.
Yeah. I wish
it could. I agree with you. It could just probably be like my background was like very C++ heavy, and that's very like why I think the way I do and about machines. And I have this inability to comprehend like more complex models, you know?
I also learned the old ways of coding, and it's not a... Listen, I think like, yeah, the whole thing with Transformers and the way they're building models now, it just feels fundamentally different. But I would love to know if listeners have thoughts, like a better way for us to think of all this stuff. Podcasts at Engadget.com. Drop us some notes. Also want to talk about a judge. The U.S. bankruptcy court has blocked the sale of InfoWars to The Onion, which is, I believe we talked about this, right? This whole thing happening.
We did, yeah. Sorry, this is annoying to me.
It is super annoying. And it's because even though the people involved, so this all stems from that wonderful conspiracy theorist, Alex Jones, who was talking, spent years bringing up conspiracies around the Sandy Hook shooting. He was found liable in 2022 for nearly $1.5 billion in damages for spreading those conspiracy theories. And his assets were put up for sale. The judge is basically declaring that they don't think that this, it didn't yield the best potential bids. And that's probably true, because I believe a lot of this, The Onion valued, was valued at $7 million. And the Sandy Hook families took the lower value from The Onion compared to whatever. There's another group that Alex Jones is, was it the First American United Companies, which is affiliated with Alex Jones's business, was likely bidding higher. But the families were like, no, like we'll take the lower one because we know what they're going to do with this asset. This is a funny thing where the judge is like, you did not do enough capitalism. You should do the most capitalism you can to make the most money you can. Therefore, this is bad. And to me, this feels like an example of like, oh, we cannot comprehend another future, can we? Can't comprehend another world where maybe the highest bidder doesn't get the deal, you know, because the actual seller, the people in charge, want to do something better than just generate the most value possible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is not settled yet. We don't know what's going to happen here, but fully disgusting. Oh, man.
Absolutely disappointing. Yeah.
Absolutely disappointing. Do you want to talk about the TikTok ban, Trillin? Because there has been a lot of stuff around it. And I don't think nothing's settled yet. We're all kind of like, it's all kind of up in the air.
Are we talking about the Australia one? The
Well, most recently, like TikTok is in the process of like trying to delay a ban, instituted a recent ban. So let me see. Here's the most recent story we have here right now. TikTok asks court to delay the law that would ban its app next month. And it's a whole thing. Like now we're in a state where like Donald Trump is going to be back in office, and he spent a while previously in his last administration trying to fight TikTok. And now he's like, no, I'm okay with it. Who knows what money changed hands there to make that happen.
I actually thought it was very interesting that over the last few weeks we saw that Australia was banning social media for under 16s.
There is that. I mean, I don't know if you guys talked about this. I talked about this when I was on Twit, but certainly
we briefly talked about social media and that Australia was considering over the U.S. Thanksgiving holiday, considering that ban. And then in the week after, I think it was official.
It's all kind of up in the air. So Carissa Bell, writing for Engadget, wrote, TikTok is beginning its last-ditch legal challenge to avoid a ban in the U.S. The company filed an emergency injunction in federal court on Monday of this week, asking for a delay in the law that would ban the app from taking effect so it could have time to mount a Supreme Court challenge. We have talked about a potential TikTok ban like quite a bit, Trillin. I don't know if your feelings about it have changed at all. I do think it is one of the, again, performative mood, a performative thing that people are doing to be like, China bad, we should worry about this. I understand why government employees may not, like, why the government may not want employees to have TikTok on their phones. Like, potentially, sure. On a widespread population basis, there are so many other ways that the Chinese government has access to data about Americans.
It's not about, I don't even think it's about that, right? I think they watch the popularity of TikTok and they can't control TikTok.
Well, they can, they can implement things to force TikTok to behave in certain ways in America. You know, they can't control it the way they maybe could a U.S. company, but still, yeah. I think maybe that's part of it here. We will see where this goes. This is every time we talk about this story, we kind of have to say, we shall see. I don't know where anything is going to go at this point. Let's move on to, I don't know, what we're working on. You guys know what I'm working on, what we're all working on. We're all getting ready for CES. I'm also in the process of re-reviewing the Xbox Series X, which is a really interesting thing, to go through and think about like where this console is right now. So I will get you that copy soon, Trillin. I'm doing
nice.
It. Yeah. What are you working on, Trillin?
Can you take a guess, Devendra? Because I've been hounding you about one thing the last few weeks, I want to say, and it's CES all the time. CES it's all I'm talking all the time, about to baby. The team.
This is God. A preview of our plans. Like, we're going to have a lot of people there. It's going to feel like an active CES. We've had smaller teams before, but this is my first time going since before the pandemic. 2020 was the last one I was at. So, you know, I've done at least like 11 years at CES, so it's not like I actively miss it, but I do miss...
No, you're not a novice, no.
I do miss being around the team and going and seeing the stuff in person and telling you guys what's good, what's not, and what is just complete junk, you know?
Devendra, mm-hmm. I will clue you in on one thing. So since it's been that long since you've been at an Engadget CES, we don't have a trailer anymore.
Oh, I heard. I don't miss the trailer.
Yeah, we have walking distance access, like next door access to nice bathrooms now.
Oof. That's so really the era of the cold, posh portable potty is over in Gadget. But anyway.
So, we are looking forward to like going to CES, but in the meantime there's a lot of prep behind the scenes that I think I'm slightly overwhelmed by. So
there's a lot of stuff like, hey, we're all going to take a deep breath and do it one step at a time. There's so much news, but Trillin has made some gigantic spreadsheets that we're all
they
just
keep
like
growing.
They keep getting bigger.
Spreadsheet
bigger.
Keeps growing. I swear to God, Devendra, it's like one person will tell me one thing, and I'm like, maybe I should make a new tab for this. So it's
no more tabs. No more tabs. I'm
trying to keep them manageable for everybody. It's a challenge.
Let's move on to our pop culture picks of the week. Anything you want to shout out?
Yeah, so when you weren't here, Devendra, in the last 2 weeks, I think I recommended a variety of things from Gladiator 2, the movie.
You recommended Gladiator 2. Yeah, do that while I'm away, please. Yeah.
Thank you. Yes, I did. I enjoyed it. So glad I did that while you were away. Yeah. But this week, one thing I didn't get around to recommending, or maybe two, there's this TV movie, I guess, on Netflix called It's What's Inside.
Yep.
Have you heard of it?
I've seen it, yeah.
Have you seen it?
It's cool. Cool little indie project.
I liked it. Yeah. It is exactly. And when I first saw the title pop up on Netflix and the description, I thought it was a reality TV series. It was very strange, but it's not. It's a fully scripted film about this person and his friends. This guy, he works for some kind of like strange tech company, and he has this contraption that allows people to switch bodies, and he controls it. And like, it's very interesting to see. I mean, this movie is kind of all over the place sometimes with the tone, because it's kind of camp in places and then not. I don't know. But it was a fun watch, right? The premise, I think, wasn't like entirely fully fleshed out, but it's kind of a whodunit mixed with a bit of a raunchy joy. I don't know.
It's a very low budget, like indie sci-fi movie thriller, because like the core concept, which is in the trailer, but slight spoiler there, but the core concept is that there's this machine that can swap your mind to somebody else's body. You do kind of a brain swap. And hijinks ensue from that alone.
Yeah, exactly.
I thought it was fine. I saw that we reviewed that on the Filmcast at some point this year.
Nice.
And there's a lot of cool stuff. Like, it's a really ingenious concept. I think the script is a lot of fun. I don't think they do enough with it. And that may be a budget issue.
I agree. I think they could have gone further. So, to your point, like, it was actually at Sundance. So mm-hmm. I think that's how early it's been sort of making the rounds. And you might have seen it on your other podcasts earlier too. So I enjoyed it. I will point out the other low budget show, trashy TV I've been watching is the latest season of The Ultimatum. I love to watch dating reality TV shows.
Which so one is this? What is the hook of this show?
This is the one where, like, whether you believe they're plants or not, couples show up on this dating show. And usually one of the two people in this relationship has headed. They're like, you marry me or we split up. And so they come to
this
show.
Oh, that's a healthy relationship right there. That's a healthy way to proceed.
Yeah, it's already great beginnings. A lovely foundation for a strong relationship, right? And then if you don't marry me, we're going to go to this show and I'll force you to marry me, or we're going to, by the way, swing. So the premise of the show is that y'all show up and then you split up for about a week, where you pick one of the other split up couples to date. And then you go into a trial marriage with your new partner for 3 weeks, and then you split up, and then you reunite with your old partner that you entered the show with, and then you do another trial marriage for, like, I don't know how many weeks. And then you decide at the end of all of that whether you want to marry each other. It all sounds really sound and therapeutic and grounded. So it's pretty funny.
Pretty funny. And did you talk about Wicked yet? I assume you've seen Wicked.
We mentioned it because Alex Kranz was on here, and yes. Alex loved Wicked. But go ahead.
It's very good. It's very, like, I just want to say, like, I was not super excited for this. I saw it on Broadway, not with, like, you know, the main actors. Like, it was fine. My seats weren't great, but music was fine. Like, it's totally fine. I think the movie is a better interpretation of that.
I'm sorry,
story.
Did you say the music was fine?
I said the music
was fine.
The
beauty of Defying Gravity and For Good and Popular.
Some good songs. Some
and
good
Dancing
songs.
Through Life.
These are not things, like, you're a show tunes person, Trillin. Like, you love the Broadway
Defying
songs.
Defying Gravity made me cry every
it's
time
great.
I watched, saw it.
I think the movie does a better job of basically bringing those songs into a narrative that gives you fully fleshed characters. Like, the movie is pretty great. John Chu, a director I like, I have liked since the Step Up movies, the movies that introduced us to the world of Channing Tatum. That guy used to listen to my movie podcast too. So it's like, it's cool to have followed his career all the way to the point where he was making a G.I. Joe movie, did Crazy Rich Asians. And now he's like, this is one of the biggest movies of the year. And it's also tremendous. I think his Wicked movie is a lot like a superhero origin story, basically. There's a lot of Superman in here, Richard Donner's Superman. A lot of nods to that. Cynthia Erivo is fantastic. So, yeah. We talked about this in person, Trillin. But I do think see it. And see it on a big screen.
Well, I gave you my reasons.
Good sound.
I will watch on streaming for sure.
I understand your reasons. So many people in Hollywood, unfortunately, have similar issues. But yes, go see it, folks, if you have not seen it yet. Likely at a Dolby screen. The Dolby Atmos screens would likely be good. It's worth sitting through. Bring your kids too. Like, there are some scary parts, but I think, like, a 6 to 8 year old, 6 to 10 year old would be totally fine with this movie as well. Good stuff, and I'm looking forward to part two.
Well, that's it for the episode this week, everyone. Thank you, as always, for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our former managing editor, Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find Devendra online at
Devendra on Blue Sky and all the other places, and also at the Filmcast at thefilmcast.com.
If you want to send me your most fun ideas for Genmoji or Image Playground, keep it PG, please. You can send them to me on Blue Sky. I am at sherlyn.bsky.social, which is CHERLYNN, by the way, or at sherlynstagram on Threads. You can always email us your thoughts about this show at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review on wherever you're listening, because it really helps us with discovery, and then subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. Put the AI in them, detect poo, clean poo.